Future Friday.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Future Friday from Hamish Hallett and John Beasy. Just want to say that we apologize for the lack of uploads. As you may know, the COVID-19 virus has kind of, let's say, taken over the world right now and has put us on like isolation, both here in England and in Canada. So we are now doing the episodes a bit more remotely. So if you hear a little bit of a audio, inconvenience or like not as good quality for the audio, this might be the reason why. So, but we are going to still get this Future Friday stuff still going during isolation period as we haven't got that much on. So might as well do that. So So John, what do you think of construction then? What is construction going on in the future right now? What's happening?
Well, there's a lot of stuff changing in construction. I think the big one is probably what we have, a lot of us know, is 3D printing. So, you know, that's, but right now it's largely on, you know, the scale of small little plastic things, but it's now possible to 3D print in wood. So theoretically you could imagine a future where you could 3D print a whole log cabin and the whole IKEA furniture set. Oh, it's also, the other big thing is also, biomaterials. So like self-healing concrete, that uses bacteria and fungi to heal its, you know, to fix cracks or bricks that bacteria grow into, and you have a, you know, you live in a building made of bacteria.
No, that's interesting. I think, definitely looking into, because I've done a bit more research kind of yesterday and also today, it definitely looks like construction is going towards, you know, 3D printing. I actually found somewhere that 3D printing, the actual industry was found to be more than 100 billion annually, according to a 2018 research report. So this was done by, I think it was by a post by Device Magic, which was saying top 11 predictions about future construction technology. So it definitely seems that 3D printing is going to be part of construction in the future. Mm-hmm. It's very interesting the fact that it's growing. Also, Grant is apparently on the same sort of article, it was saying that the industry is set to grow out over 6% annually from 2018 to 2023. So it does seem that 3D printing is one of the probably major technologies that is growing within construction. Do you think there's any like other?
These numbers specifically for construction, like 3D printing in construction or 3D printing as a whole?
Good point, actually. Yeah, good point. From what I've seen, I think it's the market of 3D printing. Sorry, my bad. 3D printing.
It is used a lot in like manufacturing.
True.
Like, in fact, my brother-in-law, he made props for movie sets, and he 3D print them, but right now because 3D movie production's kind of stopped.
Oh yeah, of course, definitely. So that sounds really interesting. That definitely the fact that 3D printing is it's not even just construction. It's also like would you say architecture is part of construction, or would you say that's a separate thing? Because I feel like architecture as well is part of that.
It's definitely involved. Mm. It's like architecture is what gives form, I guess, to. I mean, I'm not an architect, but I would say architect is probably more the artistic side of it, what gives form to, you know, construction, what you're building.
Mm. No, totally. No, that's fair enough. I think definitely we'll see. I think a lot more companies kind of try and use 3D printing a lot more. I think it's right now, even though it's quite a niche market, I think increasingly it will definitely be used from a lot of, you know, these big industries. And also I found out as well, like robotics as well is increasingly being looked into as well. So I found an article which was saying about human and robot collaboration with timber construction. So this was reported in the ETH Zurich, and it was trying to like basically to do like a comparing case actually of like collaboration with robots in terms of like trying to create timber, and it's something that was really interesting. So it went in depth with the article saying like So robot like takes a timber beam, guides it while it's being sawed to size, and then the tools then change automatically as the second robot drills the required holes for connecting the beams, and then the two robots then work together and position the beams into the computer layout. So I found that very, very interesting, and the fact that they all are based on algorithm, which, yeah, I think sounds very, very interesting. In that sense, the fact that construction is becoming more digitalized. But overall, like, this is my kind of first question to open this kind of discussion. Like, what is making construction more digitalized and/or environmentally friendly? Because we're seeing that, from my view, it seems that construction is becoming more digitalized. It's also becoming a lot more environmentally friendlier because we've seen a lot more materials being used, which are better for the environment. And in that sense, it's definitely making construction a little bit more environmentally friendlier. So yeah, what is overall making construction more digitalized and/or environmentally friendlier, would you say?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely getting more digitalized in the sense that, to 3D print something, you need a 3D model, a digital file to create something. So, I mean, I feel like a lot of architecture kind of already is that when you're designing. If you're using AutoCAD, or that's what a lot of what does it even stand for? Automated. I can't even remember what CAD stands for. Anyway, the point is AutoCAD. Although all those software is already, people are already making models of houses that are digital. You know, these are standard software for 20 years. It's just a matter of whether or not you print blueprints that people flow, or whether or not you upload it to a computer that starts, doing it itself. But for environmentally friendly, construction's a really, really bad pollutant. I think like concrete alone constitutes some 4% of carbon emissions.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's I definitely think you can't. I feel like traditional construction doesn't look into the environmental aspect. Especially with what buildings are being built on. So for example, if you can't build more houses, for example, you have to cut down more trees to create more space and stuff like that. And I do, and looking into it as well, I find there's more environmental eco-friendly materials also trying to be used, which is interesting actually. Do you have anything else to add in terms of the eco-friendly side of it, would you say?
Oh, absolutely. There's the one, biomaterials definitely make it a lot more sustainable. A biomaterial bioeconomy is one that's can be relatively detached from whatever kind of material off the material environment of that community. So you don't need you don't need marble. Like if you don't have marble, you can't build with marble, but you can always cultivate bacteria everywhere. So there's that. What's the other thing?
I'll interject as well and say that there's a lot more, not just biomaterials, but just materials themselves. So for example, with flooring and,
yes,
the walls and ceilings can all be used through by eco-friendly materials. So apparently flooring can be made from bamboo, which I was very surprised by, because I think it creates a unique image, but also can reduce carbon footprints. So that was, from what I saw, was very interesting to see. Even paints can have zero or low volatile organic compounds, because I think usually paints can be quite toxic, especially because I was watching a program. It's one of those programs which are can't remember the name of it. It was basically pretty much human, individuals building houses, but not getting the typical, oh, we're going to get loads of the actual owners themselves build the houses. I don't know what the program was, but this basically this couple wanted to build a house for their children, which was better for their breathing system. So I think their kids had asthma, I think it was. So they were to try and create less dust. So there's definitely different ways of trying to make houses not just environmentally friendlier, but just making it way more cleaner, which is interesting.
Oh, absolutely. There's definitely more trends in architecture and design to capitalize on, say, green roofs, more natural, locally sourced materials, better use of natural light, better, you know, recycling of, better distribution, use of heat, distribution of water. There's also new innovations in, you know, in concrete itself. I believe it was at University of Swinburne in Australia that created a new kind of extra bendable concrete that's 400 times more bendable than traditional concrete, while also consuming 36% less water and emitting 76% less CO2.
Interesting. Hmm. I know also they were looking into like recycling steel as well, because I know steel is very recyclable, but I don't know if not many like construction companies look into steel and try and recycle it. But the fact they're maybe looking into recycling steel, I know they're trying to also maybe finding a way to salvage and reclaim wood, because we kind of use a lot of wood, let's say like paper, for example. But I feel like, yeah, I think there's a way of trying to find a way to reclaim wood as well.
Yeah, well, that was one of the really cool things about the 3D printing for wood is that it's these filaments can largely, they're looking into whether and how much, all you really need is cellulose. Mm-hmm. So it's largely created from like pulp, like paper pulp. So what they were looking into is whether or not how well they can actually, you know, recycle other wooden product, like other wooden natural products, anything with cellulose basically, back into these kind of 3D printable filaments. Mm. So that can be quite something where you can just not only just quickly create housing for, you know, quick, easy, accessible social housing. Not only is it quick and easy, but the fact that it's so quick and easy allows it to be, you know, it's allows it to be beautiful. Mm. And that it doesn't have to be, you know, you kind of look at generic, anything quick, kind of Soviet-esque design doesn't necessarily look aesthetically pleasing. Any of the buildings, you know, you know yourself, if you walk around in the UK, you see a lot of the more beautiful, classical kind of oriented buildings are usually big, fancy, wealthy ones in London, while the poor ones tend to be slums. They're not what you want to look at. Mm. But if anyone can 3D print and, you know, and these files can be freely distributed, you know, anyone with the resources can 3D print the Louis XIV's, you know, chest of drawers or something.
Yeah, that'd be really interesting, actually, if you could try and recreate, you know, something like that, which would be interesting. I kind of saw the fact that I think what 3D printing has over the edge of, let's say, traditional wooden or plastic models, is the fact that 3D printer can actually curve. So the fact you're talking about, like, a lot of the modern, like, London buildings, the fact they kind of look very very visually appeasing. the fact that 3D printer can actually curve as well, which is interesting. So it's the fact that 3D printer can actually maybe make buildings so much better than what buildings are traditionally looking like. You know, it's not just the same old, you know, foundation, you know, all that kind of things. It's actually changing construction, changing architecture. Like, I think construction architecture can interlink a little bit, but can change how visually we see houses, buildings in general, which will be interesting to see.
Well, the other thing also is increasing use of modular design. Building places that can be multiple uses or interchangeable, or, you know, have, you know, it's kind of like have an amphitheater that can double as some other function. Or you have a public square that can quickly, assemble into an amphitheater, so you can put up parks or have up concerts. So, like, say for example, there's autonomous boats being developed in the Netherlands that can be used to kind of create like ad hoc bridges and platforms and stages. So imagine if you have an area where it's just a big kind of public square, and then later on you have a big stage assembled, and that's for a concert, and people are going on and doing things. So buildings can be designed to have interchangeable parts, like tools they don't have to be these static things that we, you know, these static immovables.
I was about to ask, actually, what is there a difference between modular construction and 3D printing? Or are they like the same thing? Because I was kind of trying to read it and I wasn't too sure if they're similar or they're kind of both different things, if you know the difference.
I would, yeah, well, 3D printing is more like the process of itself, of, you know, basically taking like a hot glue gun, essentially what's like a hot glue gun, but, you know, whatever material instead of glue, and then just kind of pouring it into a space to create something. That's more the process. Modular design is trying to create something in particular to be modular, to have interchangeable parts that can work and function in different forms. So, you know, you don't necessarily need something that can be modular doesn't have to be 3D printed. And just because something's 3D printed isn't necessarily modular. A lot of basic 3D printing is, you know, building one single hard piece of plastic, and doesn't necessarily look good because you can't have things be in separate parts because you don't know how to do that yet.
Of course. Yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. So yeah, 3D printing is, just to like have everyone who's listening to this, so 3D printing is more the process, whereas the modular construction is more the actual physical like parts. That's correct, or is that what I'm getting at?
Yeah, but for the most part.
That's fair enough. Okay, fair enough. That's like the most basic kind of understanding. So yeah, we kind of spoke a lot about 3D printing, but I also found, like, even though a lot of these new technologies, such as, you know, robotics, 3D printing, you know, eco like materials becoming more environmentally friendlier, a lot of that is impacting the construction industry. But also there's a lot of new technologies that are actually helping the workers of construction. So, for example, exoskeletons I actually found. And that was pretty interesting actually to look into. So if people don't know what exoskeletons are, they're kind of like body suits, if they are, I think they are called. Where I've found, you know, in the same sort of device magic, you know, top level predictions about future construction technology, they're saying that these skeletons can actually increase worker safety, which helps, you know, reduce to exposure to hazards on the job site. And it also can increase strength, which I found very interesting. So, yeah, John, do you know anything a bit more about exoskeletons?
Yeah, I mean, they're basically robot suits out of science fiction. I mean, they're not anywhere near, like, it's not like Iron Man and you're not going to fly or anything, but for the most part, it's pretty basic stuff.
Okay.
Where it's like, you know, you could wear something that might have like some hydraulics in it that could allow you to lift or do things more than you normally could, you know, give you reinforcement on your back or on your legs, allow you to lift and do heavier things. So like, imagine if you, it's, so it's like, imagine if it's like wearing a forklift.
Yeah.
Like you are, so for the most part, it's like that, or it can be kind of like in Centaur work, and where it's you have the robot, but the person's not necessarily in it, but they're controlling it remotely. So that's used a lot in, say, like mining or timber operations, where you can have people, you know, actually in a city and then mining in some remote location hundreds of kilometers away.
Yeah. Okay. That's fair enough. Yeah. Because I kind of, when I first heard of this idea, I straight away thought, I don't know if you, have you played Call of Duty before? You must have.
Sure. With friends.
Yeah. Do you know like the Advanced Warfare one?
I know it exists.
Yes. And it had, well, they had like exosuits and stuff like that. That's why when I first heard of like exoskeletons, I was thinking, oh my God, what? So they could just do all these little things and stuff like that. Like, yeah, that's what I thought.
Might be it further down the road, but right now they're pretty basic stuff. They're looking into, you know, how it can be used to improve running or improve strength.
Okay, fair enough. Cool. So it's more like a basic. Yeah, that's fair enough. It's way more.
Like, not the fundamentals right now.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I think it's good to kind of, because it does sound really interesting, because I think, yeah, if it's just trying to look into the basics, get those nailed down, definitely will be used. If it's, for example, increasing strength, if it's trying to lift stuff, and then more down the line, we could use these, you know, in other industries, which would be very interesting to see. But yeah, no, just to kind of relate another question, actually, we've been speaking a lot about these new technologies, but how might these new technologies make construction kind of easier and more cost effective, would you say?
Well, the fact that you can, you know, they've already tested that you could theoretically 3D print an entire building in 3 days, an entirely automated process, no human intervention at all. So that if that could theoretically be sped up, well, all you really need, all that is the cost of time and the cost of materials. There's no labor involved. So that's a lot cheaper. It's a lot faster. These materials can often be biodegradable, so you can just, you know, build a building willy-nilly and not worry about it being, bad, or what kind of negative consequences it might have on the environment. And it will, it's largely labor costs. The exoskeletons can definitely help make it easier on the workers, both in terms of safety and in terms of efficiency, just how much more they could do. You probably four workers with some exosuits can do as much as maybe 40 on their own without anything.
Oh yeah, of course. And it's the fact that because houses take so long to build, I think it would definitely speed the process hugely. The fact also we have a growing population, I think in the world, I think, and that demand is growing. The fact that we have such a growing population, and so I think these new technologies are here to try and make it to try and build these buildings quickly as possible.
Oh, absolutely. Social housing is where a lot of these people are looking at using these for, is like rapidly build social housing. Why don't you, it's one thing to invest $10 million in building, four units of social housing. It's another thing when you can spend $10 million and build, 40 or 400 in 3 weeks.
Yeah, that would be impressive to definitely kind of do. If you're able to kind of build these houses so quickly, especially when you have, because I feel like in general, in London, for example, like in these big major cities, not just in London, it's like there's always these housing crisis. There's these housing crisis where people are just trying to rent houses because they can't buy a house. Well, actually, I don't know. It's like you could put more houses there, but then then the price might still be the exact same, but maybe trying to find a way of, finding ways of building more houses I think it'd be interesting definitely to have, because I think in my eyes, I think houses and buildings in general take too long to build. I definitely think these technologies will make it a lot much more kind of easier to do. But then we could also address the second part. Would it make it more cost effective as well, do you say?
Well, of course, you don't have to pay people. Like labor is the biggest cost for most organizations. You take people out of the equation, you don't have to pay insurance, you don't have to pay whatever. You have the machinery, you pay its upkeep, and you just pay materials. Yeah. And if these materials can be, sustainably harvested, and there can be, if they're just bacteria cultures, that's really cheap, especially if you own it yourself. So yeah, it can drastically reduce the costs of building things.
Absolutely. The fact is, yeah, it's kind of the fact that robots can do it so much more quicker than human beings as well is something that is interesting to see, definitely. But then of course, even though we said, it's more cost effective because you don't have to pay for labor, for example, that is also a big potential risk and maybe a danger by trying to advocate more automation, because I think not just construction, but there's other industries like, I'm trying to think what else has been automated. A lot of other industries have been automated, but it potentially might create a loss of jobs. Would you say that's a very big risk? The fact that you're going to create a large force, especially a lot of unskilled workers who won't, maybe might not be able to find another job relating to construction. Would these new technologies pose this risk to the workforce?
Sure. I mean, that's just the nature of automation, is it changes. People, you need new technologies require less workers have to go find something else to do. And, the new jobs that are created are usually higher skilled and higher education. So it's not necessarily an issue specific to construction. It's just the nature of automation. And how we deal with that is what kind of social systems are we going to create to facilitate these transitions?
Absolutely. True. Would you say there's like specific, let's maybe try and make it a bit more specific to like construction. Are there kind of, because of these new technologies like 3D printing, are there like specific causes of concern, or would you say it's quite general, do you say?
I'm no expert.
That's fine.
But I don't see how it's like going, how it could be something particularly risky in and of itself. There's the social problems of unemployment of construction workers, sure, but that's something we can fix and deal with. But I don't see necessarily it's not like 3D printing robots are going to become sentient and stop 3D printing for us anymore. I'm not sure how many errors there could be outside of problems we already have.
I know what you mean. Like, I wouldn't say there's like big new issue that would be created just specifically for construction, just because these issues I think are seen in other industries. But like, I would say, I know one off the top of my head, but like cyber attacks and things like that. So because construction is becoming a lot more digitalized, it is also prone to, you know, people might want to try and hack it. So for example, like ransomware, which is this software which has attacked not just individuals, but is also looking to try to attack critical infrastructure. So I think it's something called ECANS, I think it is. It can target, you know, power generation, water treatment, and hospitals. So if our buildings become a lot more like, you know, remotely controlled through digital means, you know, what if this cyber like attack happens? You know, it potentially has
When you're talking about smart buildings, that's different than smart construction.
Do you think?
Yeah, because you're talking about like building. Because you're talking about the technology in the building, whether or not, like, I don't know how much, whether the pipes have smart sensors in them, the lights are, you know, are automated and all that, rather than like, is the construction of the wall, has the construction of the wall been human done, or is it done by a computer that 3D printed a 3D model? So like,
okay,
it would be more about like whether or not like ransomware could maybe hold, you know, the 3D printers on ransom, but that's a different question than like the problem of smart homes and the Internet of Things.
Oh, right. Okay. Fair enough. So you kind of see more of a difference. Okay. I mean, I don't know. I kind of, but at the same time though, the buildings are still being constructed in a, I'm not saying in a digital way. How I'm trying to word it is,
like we're talking about the interconnectedness and the building smart buildings, like having sensors that are all connected to the internet.
Yeah,
but we already kind of have those. Those can be. You don't have to smart create. You don't have to 3D print those. You just have to have someone go in and plug in sensors with Wi-Fi chips in them.
That's true.
Okay. Like they're related, but they're separate phenomena.
Okay, fair enough. It's way more kind of separate. You could also, it's like, how do I say this? I still think like, because I know also there's a lot of, what if, I don't know, you have an automated crane, for example, right? That's still relating to construction, isn't it? So what if that crane gets control and it tries to bang into a massive building, for example?
Now that would be a security issue for like, now that's the kind of stuff that we'd be talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. Like that maybe. Yeah.
It would be more the machinery and the hardware itself that have the risk. But at the same time, it's that's the question of whether, well, do we necessarily upload these, like, are these machines connected to the World Wide Web? Because they don't necessarily have to. If you have a giant 3D printer, it can theoretically function offline if you just plug in a USB chip and that has the file it needs to do. Or whether or not it's remotely uploaded. There always are those risks, but those are all endemic security issues of technology itself, whether or not we're designing with privacy in mind, whether we're encrypting and how, whether we're taking the appropriate security measures and whether we have passwords that are more than just password one.
Yeah, no, true. I think that's it. Yeah, I think that's more of a general, definitely a big general conversation, because even though, yes, I agree that maybe our world does need to go more digital, not just for like efficient reasons, but as we've mentioned, more environmentally better. I do think we do also need to be careful about, how do we protect a lot of this sort of big data? Like, how do we, like trying to construction, like we need some sort of software that protects cranes from not doing something that could be hacked and have massive damage, for example. Or even like, I don't know, what if like these big like echo skeletons get, malfunctioned, for example? Are these cranes, for example, that might get ultimate, like, do these driverless cars around construction site, are they actually good? Are they very good to be driven automatically? So I think it's a lot of definitely big questions that we need to ask ourselves. And I think it'll be interesting to see over the next few years what will come. And I think
I was going to say the safest way to keep automated things from being hacked is to not connect them to the internet.
How do you do that?
You don't plug them in. You don't hook them up to the internet. So just because something's an automated system doesn't have to be hooked up to the internet to function.
Oh, does it not? Okay.
No, it can do all the processing locally.
That's fair enough. What would it?
If you turn your phone into off, if you turn your phone into airplane mode and turn on dictation, if you have the offline dictionary downloaded to your phone, it can do all that processing on its own. It doesn't have to connect to some remote server. So just because these cranes are automated doesn't necessarily mean that they have to be connected to the internet.
Interesting. Okay, so maybe that's a way of trying to maybe balance between, having these sort of automated controls that can create, more efficient ways for construction, but also doing it offline so it doesn't risk it being hacked, for example.
Like,
so
you can have all these cranes, like you have multiple cranes in one site and they can all be hooked up to one central computer, but that central computer might be on the site and not be connected to the internet itself.
Okay, interesting. I think it's definitely something to look into, especially the fact, I think construction definitely has a few years ahead of it, ahead of itself, definitely. And I found this one quote, which we'll just have this like a last kind of question, and then we'll go into our weak signal. But it was saying that, this quote was saying, the construction site will be human-free by 2050. Now, that is a pretty bold statement to be made. So this statement was been made by, I'll try and find who the person is. I think it's by a company called Balfour Beatty, made that big statement. I'm just going to open it up and say, I kind of agree and disagree. I think definitely, it depends what you define the construction site. Do you define the construction site as the physical thing being made, in terms of the building actually being built on it, or the processing of building it be human free, or how do we define the construction site? So I kind of agree that yes, there'll be a lot more automation happening, but I also slightly disagree because I still think human beings will still be around the construction site. If it's by 2050, all of this might change, but I think it will depend, definitely. How do you feel about that question, John? Do you agree or disagree?
How I interpret construction site is the physical space, Where like where the building occurs, so you know the part that gets fenced off and you have to wear a hard hat in. That's how I interpreted it. So whether or not that could be human fit free by 2050, I wouldn't be surprised if that thing, because you know we've already discussed all the different kinds of ways in which that can be automated, so I wouldn't be surprised if that's the case. Whether or not there's physical people on the site, whether there's people involved in the entire process of construction, I'm pretty sure there'll still be people involved in that. But whether or not you'll have people like boots on the ground and people actually like hammering and doing things with their hands on the site, in the future, that might not be the case.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think it's definitely a possible future. But I don't know. I think it will be very interesting. I think 2050 is a long, long time. It's a long time in the future. So yeah, I kind of agree with that argument. So I won't be too surprised if it is human free, especially the fact that the way technology is going. But at the same time, I think you know you still have to have, like, for example, maybe drone pilots. For example, you might still have to have. You might have to still have these people kind of controlling certain elements of the automation happening. So, I think it's very interesting to see what construction will be by that point. I think that's a pretty good discussion around construction. We're then going to go to our weak signals. Do you want to go first, or should I go first?
You can go.
Yeah, cool, perfect. So my weak signal is robot humor. So it's I saw an article by Thomas Baines, which is on Policy Horizons Canada, saying robot humor reaching for the singularity. I don't know if that was a pun or not, but that was the article name. So it's basically looking into AI going into comedy, and how it can definitely change the way comedy is being seen, or how it's like viewed. It's basically trying to create, you know, new ideas that comedy won't actually be said by comedians, but actually robots themselves. And it's definitely trying to change, I would say, the cultural and social dynamics to be a lot more robotic. I think it was very interesting actually to read the article, the fact that, you know, AI is no longer just looking into a set specific industry. So that's, you know, making automation, for example, if that's, you know, like security wise, but it's also looking into like social and cultural ideas as well, like comedy, which is very interesting. I don't know how you feel about this, John, because I'm kind of like, I'm not too sure about it, if I'm being honest, because I think being funny is very subjective. It's like, I could say a funny joke, which I think it's funny, but you might not agree it's funny. So I don't know how could we let robots, not saying take over humor, but how could robots be funny? That's my kind of understanding.
I mean, there's lots of different ways they can be funny. I think right now is I've seen like Facebook meme groups where it's like they're automatically generated memes, so it's like they automatically generate random, they here's a template, and then they automatically generate random photos inside, and I think those are funny because sometimes it just makes no sense and it's absolutely absurd. Say, for example, have you ever heard of Botnik?
I know what bot is, but not a bot.
But not Botnik. Botnik is an AI that essentially it's people feed it like screenplays or other kinds of like scripts. And it basically will try to recreate one of them. And so people oftentimes work with it to create something humorous. So there's it once wrote an entire chapter of Harry Potter. There's a couple of them where it takes like a press briefing of the like White House press briefings, or a stereo, you know, they gave it a bunch of like Hallmark Christmas movies, and it gave a generic Christmas script, and they're all like make no, like they're total, like they're really close, but they're also totally off the rails.
Okay, so
there are ways in which yeah, it is, AI's humor is subjective. It's just, and that's the thing, is whether or not we find it funny.
Mm. Yeah, no, because when I was kind of reading into this, I was kind of like, this is kind of interesting, because I don't know, like, because I find being funny is a very unique trait to human beings, because I don't think, you know, trying to be a comedian, I think, is one of the hardest jobs in the world, because, you know, you can't say a very typical joke. You have to be like outside the box. I don't know if AI could do that, because I feel like AI is very in the box, could do certain things, but then, yeah, like these bots that you've been mentioning could just, you know, randomly generate certain things, certain jokes, and, you know, do certain things, which sound very interesting. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's definitely something to think about if robots could become funny. But yeah, that was my weak signal. So yeah, what's your weak signal, John?
I got one about a recently published study that finds that it tested five major AI offerings from major US corporations and found that it, just like faces, AI voice recognition systems struggle to understand the speech of Black Americans compared to white Americans. They tested voice samples of white Californians, and it misinterpreted their speech an average of 19% of the time. And then it took samples of the corpus of regional African-American language, so various different samples of, I guess, Black speak across the United States, and it got it wrong 35% of the time. And in over 25% of Black speech samples, the AIs all interpreted so poorly that the transcriptions were essentially useless, compared to only 2% of white speech cases.
Wow. So you're saying there was like a 20% to 2%. Sorry. Okay. That's God. So it's really bad then. So it's not even just facial recognition that is not capturing ethnic minorities, but it's also like the voice recognition isn't doing well either.
Yeah. I mean, if you test voice recognition to all test on one particular accent.
Yeah,
of course. Like, I know I sometimes struggle with, sometimes I'll say things to Siri and it doesn't quite understand me. Cause I mean, sometimes that's just how it is. Other times it's like, oh, you can't understand my E's or my R's or whatever.
Yeah, no, that's true, actually. I think with any sort of, yeah, like with Siri, for example, if I try and do it, sometimes they don't recognize my voice, either because I'm like mumbling or something, or my accent or something. Yeah, I kind of agree. But then, yeah, that's pretty dodgy, though, to still look into that, especially with like maybe the test samples as well. Like maybe they're having different types of speeches in for like things like Siri, but maybe there's just not enough. Maybe there's too predominant of a white California accent compared to another accent, potentially. Maybe that's why.
Like when you go into like, you know, your settings on Siri, you can see, you know, the voice options, like, yeah, you have different accents. You have English UK, you have English US, and like, okay, what about Canadian English? Canadians speak a fair, you know, aren't similar to American English, but it's different. And then you have,
yeah, that's true.
You know, Maritimers, yeah, are a bit different from, you know, Ontario, Quebec. And then you have Newfoundland, which is totally different. And I'm sure you know firsthand that the UK has a plethora of different accents. Not everyone speaks like the Queen.
Yeah, no, true. Honestly, I agree. I think that's another thing. Yeah, definitely. I think even accents, 100%. It's like you might have a typical British, like Cockney accent, maybe. You might have a, you know, Scottish accent, Irish. Yeah, like you have so many different accents. So, but at the same time, sorry.
Then you also have people who have English as their second language. You're going to have accents informed by their first languages.
But then, would you say then, it might become very, very complicated for these voice recognition companies, like let's say Apple that uses Siri, for example, to try and get every single accent on their thing? Would that be very complicated, very time consuming, would you say, though?
Sure, it probably would. I mean, of course, it's going to take time and effort, but that's the question is, you know, is that time and effort worth making technology accessible to all people on their own terms? Is that worth that? I would say so.
Yeah, no, true. I would say, yeah, especially in terms of if it's based on race, for example, even gender, for example, as well. Definitely. I think if they try and maybe focus towards different like racial accents, if you can conceptualize that, I think, or even like men and women speaking differently, like definitely that, because that would be a bit very bad if Siri can only recognize, you know, a male voice over a female voice more. So yeah, it definitely looks into more testing then of this weak signal then, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Do you have anything else to add from this weak signal? Or?
No, that's about it.
Nice. Okay, fair enough. No, this is a really good conversation about construction, also looking to these two weak signals. So yeah, I just want to say thank you very much, John, for joining in from Canada. And yeah, thanks everyone for listening. And you will hear another episode next week. We'll get another topic up. And yeah, glad you guys are liking the episodes. You can find us on Spotify. You can also find us also on, is it Apple Podcasts as well?
Yeah, we're there now.
We are there now. Perfect. So yeah, we're on there now as well. So hope you guys have an amazing day. Stay inside, stay isolated, and you'll hear another episode of Future Friday
for next week.